How many books do we read a year? Like 5 books a year. So that means that in the whole of the rest of our lives, we're going to read another 250 books. We should really choose carefully what books we're going to read. 250 books? That's insane. I need to read more than that in my life.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org, elmad.pardes.org.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of This Pardes Life. My name is Zvi Hirschfield, and it's my privilege today to be learning Bechavruta with my friend and colleague and teacher and mentor, Alex Israel, Rabbi Alex Israel, who here at Pardes is director of continuing education and of the Pardes summer programs. Alex is also well known as a teacher of a range of Jewish topics with a special expertise in Tanakh, and he is a published author with his commentary on the Book of Kings. And we are privileged to have him here today. Even though he's not going to be doing Tanakh with us, he's going to be doing something else.
Thank you very much, Zvi, for that wonderful introduction. I'm excited to be here today. And Zvi asked me to choose a text which has been meaningful to me and has moved me and shaped me. The text I've chosen today, it comes from the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, Maimonides' Code of Jewish Law. And even though this might not be strictly law, the section that we're going to learn, it's going to, I think, give the underpinning of values which I think really shape our lives and Jewish living as a whole. And we're going to be reading from Hilchot Deot, which is the segment of the Rambam which deals with character traits, and the third chapter, Perek Shlishi, the third chapter of Hilchot Deot in Mishneh Torah.
Okay, let's get started, and we'll read it together, we'll translate, and then we'll jump in.
Fabulous. You want me to read?
Please.
Okay. So the Rambam begins like this. Shema Yomar Adam, possibly a person will say, Ho'il v'hakina v'hatava v'hakavod u'choyotze behem derech ra'ahem u'motzim et ha'dan min ha'olam. Maybe jealousy, one might say that since jealousy, passion, and desire for honor are an evil path, and they take a person out of the world, since a person might think that, efrosh mehem bioter, I'll go to the other extreme, v'etrachek l'sad ha'acharon, I will go to the ultimate end, to the ultimate extremity. Ad shelo yochal basar v'lo yishte yayin. I won't eat any meat. I won't drink any wine. Lo yisa isha, I'll be celibate. I won't get married. V'lo yeshev b'dira na'a. And I won't have nice surroundings. V'lo yilbash malbush na'eh. Ela hasak v'atzemer hakasheh. I won't wear nice clothes. I'll just wear, you know, some sort of very tough material.
A burlap sack.
Something like that. Uchiyotze behem, kugon komrei Edom, and he takes the example from other religions who have a sort of monastic existence, and he says that might be the way of religion. Gam ze derech ra'ahu, v'asur leilechba. This is a bad path, even an evil path, and one must not tread on that path. Hamhalech b'derech su nikra chote. A person who walks this path is considered as a sinner. And it's interesting, his proof here, he says, with a Nazirite, Harihu Omer Benazir, with a Nazirite who is a person who denies himself the pleasure of wine, who leaves his hair long, it says, V'chiper alav me'ashech hata'al ha'nefesh, that he has to give atonement for his sins. And the rabbis say, what with a Nazir, a Nazirite, who only separated himself from wine, shelo piresh ela min hayayin tzarich kapara, if he needs atonement just from denial of wine, hamoneh atzmo mikol davar al achat kama v'kama. Somebody who denies himself from all worldly pleasures, all the more so. And therefore, the Rambam continues and says, a person should be worldly, a person should be able to enjoy the pleasures of life and be involved in this world.
So, Alex, I'm a little troubled by the fact that the Rambam calls such a person a sinner. I can understand him saying he's missing the mark, he's missing out, he's denying himself. But what's the sin in going to this extreme of giving up on physical pleasures and giving up on the things that so many people seem to pursue?
So I think when we think about this, I think there are a couple of things. Number one, I think there is a perspective which views this world as a very, very negative place. The soul is holy, and the body is sullied with sin, and all this world is just temptation and trying to lead the soul, the holy soul, astray. And this sort of philosophy might lead a person to really see the entire material world as negative, as exceedingly suspicious. You know, anything to do with possessions might lead you to be over-possessive, might lead me to steal, might lead me to be, you know, having indiscretion in my financial dealings. If I have a beautiful home, I'll just want to, and we do have a problem of commercialism, that we sometimes, we have something and then we want more, and we want the latest model, and we want the latest, you know, whatever it is, and it definitely is a problem. And therefore, you can see the temptation to deny oneself, to go to the other extreme. So I think the first thing is that the Rambam is making a statement about the world, the material world. God gave us a world and wanted us to be here. And he saw it as a positive environment, an environment which is meant to give us health. But I actually think there's a second dimension as well. The Rambam says, "Tzivu chachamim shelo yina adam atzmo ela midvarim shemana ha-Torah bilvad." That Torah and Judaism is restrictive enough. One could say that if Torah has its instructions and its prohibitions, if I'm adding all sorts of new prohibitions, I can't wear fashionable clothing, I should have a sort of horrible, I don't know, the walls peeling in my house, I should have an uncomfortable bed, whatever it might be. Suddenly that's a whole dimension of things that I sort of invented. The Torah has a certain way. It's a good way. It's a way where we have a lot of restrictions to keep us away from bad things, and a lot of positive instructions to give us good ways. If I start inventing a whole edifice of new laws and new restrictions, I'm sort of creating a new Torah. That's not God's Torah. That's my Torah that I've added it on. So the Torah has given us restrictions. I don't need to add more. So I'm sinning in two ways. Number one, I'm denying the beautiful world which God has given me, which I see positively. And number two, if you want, I'm sort of causing violence to the Torah because I've sort of made an extra Torah on top of the Torah.
Have you yourself, I'm curious, ever been tempted to turn your back a little bit on the temptations of this world because you felt it was getting in the way of your own spiritual development?
I think anybody human feels this way. First of all, I think we're all currently struggling with our electronic distractions. Electronic distractions do relate, I think, to at least one of the dimensions the Rambam mentioned. He said, kina, jealousy, ta'ava, which is sort of like a carnal desire maybe, but he said kavod, honor. And I think there's a lot of, especially when people are addicted to their Facebook or to their Instagram, there's a lot of need for honor, for attention. We're attention-seeking creatures. Suddenly when we hear that ping and we realize we've got an email, ooh, I got mail, right? And I think there is that element that we're all struggling with that. But I think that certainly when I was a teenager, coming out of my teenage years, student years, I felt a great need to pull away from the over-materialism of society. And I think I did feel this need that maybe the society I'd grown up with was overly materialistic. All sorts of norms. It's something which has been a conversation within me for a long time. I think also when you live within the religious Jewish world, I grew up in a modern Orthodox home, but a lot of my teachers were more ultra-Orthodox. And frequently the ultra-Orthodox world appears to be a world which practices more denial of society. And a lot of those people were my teachers, because at an early stage I saw that as more authentic, even though I'd grown up in a religious home which was worldly and which actually trod the tradition of my ancestors of Torah im Derech Eretz. They actually came from the Hirshian Frankfurt Jewish community, which really valued engagement with the world, with worldly knowledge. I think I was always struggling whether this world we live in, both in terms of its knowledge, in terms of its materialism, isn't entirely kosher. And I think I spent a lot of time struggling with this.
So it leads me almost way to the next question. Do you think someone could take this position too far? You're out there teaching, we must engage the world. And I'm thinking to myself, Do you think there's other areas we shouldn't engage? Is that too open in your opinion?
I think the answer certainly is yes. First of all, again, I think the Torah itself gives us very wise boundaries on these areas. Some of them maybe relate more to ta'ava, to desire. But already, I would say, not Maimonides, but Nachmanides, the Ramban, invents a fascinating or beautiful phrase, which he calls a naval bershut ha-Torah. He says that we can have people who eat glut kosher.
Well, let's translate that. A impious or a disgusting person, all done within the permission of the Torah.
Right. In other words, a person can eat glut kosher food but stuff their face. A person can be obsessed with material possessions. The minute they've finished, you know, wallpapering the room, and they've got to now buy new carpet to match the wallpaper, and then they need to change the furniture, but then they say, oh, wait, now I need to change the wallpaper again. A person then becomes, they haven't, all their money has been obtained legitimately, but they're living their whole life within the material. So Nachmanides says that even though everything is obtained through legal means and all the food is 100% kosher, that is not a holy way of living. I think we all suffer from this. We live in an exceedingly materialistic age. We live in quite a sexual age. And I think we're constantly struggling with the balance between what is the correct place of us with all of these things which surround us.
So I can now understand the appeal of the one who wants to go to the extreme, because what you're describing sounds so complicated. Be in the world, but be very cautious how you are in the world. Allow yourself the pleasures that the Torah has given you, but remember to be holy in that context. This is a hard way to live.
I think that's life. I really think that is the art of living. I mean, I think I look at my kids can, you know, eat whatever they like. I've reached an age where I can't. Constantly monitoring your food, but again, monitoring other things as well. I'd say Judaism has a wonderful thing called Shmirat HaLashon, being careful how we talk. We're meant to be careful not to talk disparagingly about other people or not to gossip too much. But sometimes also the question is, when I'm with friends at dinner, how do I make sure that I don't monopolize the conversation and, you know, interrupt people? That can be called manners. But I think, you know, that we all have to struggle with the degree to which I indulge myself in the world, how much I impose myself over the world, and that balancing is really the art of living. And the Rambam is introducing us into that balance.
And he's saying we can't escape it. In other words, if we think the way to solve this is just to avoid it, that's not the authentic living that the Torah wants from us.
I think you said it. Maybe we think we can avoid it, but I would argue that even people who are quite ascetic are probably still struggling with these things. And therefore, the Rambam says, why don't you just focus on the laws the Torah has given you, but realize that you can have a dignified life? I'd say even more than that. There is something, I think I'm quite attracted as a human being to aesthetics. And I think that I personally, as a human being, would be miserable if I had to live in poor surroundings, if I had to you know, not be able to see things around me which are beautiful and at least sort of look neat and good. When I examine, I mean, of course, there are different people, and some people, these things don't bother one little bit. But sometimes I look at that as the way God made me, the Tzelem Elohim in me. And there are things that God has restricted from me. But I do think that God is also a benevolent God, and God has given us a beautiful world. We see how beautiful nature is. We see how human creations in art, in architecture, and other things can create great beauty. And in fact, one of the phrases which is said to do with the Nazir is that God will take to task any of us who denied ourselves pleasure of this world. That is also something which God gives to us, which is meant to give us pleasure in this world, and which is in sense maybe God also has an aesthetic sense. God creates his world, and as he builds his world, he keeps on saying that it is tov, it is good. The mountains are good, the seas are good. There is something beautiful about them, as it is expressed by many of the psalms that we say on regular basis.
Beautiful. Okay. Should we move on to the
yes,
second half here?
The chapter's a long chapter, but I would like to go to another stage which has really shaped me. And I'm going to pick a couple of lines from the second halacha, halacha bet, and gimel. And the Rambam is now going to give the if you want, the redressing the balance. Because, of course, if I'm going to be in a world when I'm going to indulge in the world, and the Rambam says that a person can be involved in eating and drinking and sex and living in a beautiful house and wearing nice clothes, so what's going to make that into a godly life? And therefore, the Rambam continues in the second halacha and says, Sarich ha'adam shechavein kol ma'asav kulam kedei leida et Hashem baruch hu bilvad. That really a person should take all his actions and direct them to know God. And when he gets up in the morning, and b'diburo, when he speaks, it should all be about this. Ketzad, says the Rambam, how do we do this? When a person should engage in business, sheyisav yitain, o yasem alacha litol sachar. When I go to work, lo yeh b'libo kibbutz mamon bilvad. It shouldn't be just about getting rich. I should go to work in order that I should find the things which are necessary for me. That I should have a home, that I should have enough food to eat, I should have be able to raise a family. And he says, even when I do physical things, like even when I eat, I drink, even in sex, it's not about pleasure, but rather it's about higher things. The aim is to harness my entire life to a higher cause, my family, and everything that I'm building. And he ends off the halacha and says, ends off halacha gimel, ends off the chapter, and says, Afilu b'shashu yashen, even when he's sleeping, in yashen ledak k'dei shetanuach dato alav, v'yanoch gufo, k'dei shelo yichleh v'lo if when he's sleeping, he sleeps and he rests in order that he will be a healthy person, because obviously a person can't serve God in a state of sickness. Even his sleep, such a passive mode of activity, something where we would appear to be really restricted from serving God, even my sleeping is avodah l'makom baruch hu. That is indeed service of God. In other words, I can harness all of my material and physical life to a godly aim. And he finishes off with a lovely sort of catchphrase to this. About this, our rabbi said, all your acts should be for the service of God, for the sake of heaven. And that he quotes from Shlomo, from Mishle, who says, in all your paths you should know him, you should know God, and he will make your paths straight. So this is the text that the Rambam says. Again, going back to maybe what this has meant to me and what this means to me. The question is really, as a religious person, how can we live our lives, our worldly lives? How can we make our lives holy? There's an instruction in the book of Vayikra, Kedoshim to you, you shall be holy. God didn't create us as angels. God created us as physical beings. So, of course, a person can involve themselves in actual acts of mitzvah. We can, give charity. We can say a blessing before we eat food. We can pray. We can sit in a sukkah, do all sorts of mitzvahs. But the question is, so much of our lives is taken in mundane things, doing the shopping, looking after our kids, or worrying about how do we make our entire lives holy? And the Rambam says, as we're trying to build a home for our family and give our family everything we need, this can be a godly act. This can be an act which takes us into the realm of the divine.
Do you think, as hearing this, I guess two questions came up for me, but I'll go with the first one first. This intense idealism, to look at everything in my life from the perspective of what is that ultimate goal. Like, I'm thinking on the one hand, it sounds beautiful, but also sounds overwhelming. Do I really want to go to sleep every night thinking, okay, what's the exact number of hours I need in order to function well tomorrow? Do I really want to watch a sporting event with this rationalization of, well, I'm only doing this so my mind will be more clear for Torah study later? This sounds so difficult.
It's true. I remember, and a person can actually become sick over it, I think. I remember many years ago, this is going back over 20 years ago, we were going out, a few friends of ours, and we were discussing how many books we read. So we said, you know, how many books do we read a year, right? So somebody says, you know, you read like 5 books a year. So we said, okay, so that's really interesting. So you read 5 books a year, so that means every 10 years you read 50 books, right? So let's say at the time we were 30 when we were having this discussion. Okay, so we said, okay, so, you know, so that means that in the whole of the rest of our lives, we're going to read another 250 books.
God willing.
God willing. So so we should really choose carefully what books we're going to read, right? So it was just a group of friends sitting there. One of a friend told me a few weeks later that one of the people who'd been sitting there had suddenly, after this conversation, got completely obsessive and started reading one book a week. Because he decided, look, 250 books, that's insane, right? I need to read more than that in my life, right? I want to be, that friend is actually now an academic, a professor, and he reads a lot. There is that sense that person can become obsessed and frightened and anxious and say, you know, how do I do this? And I certainly can see that. On the other hand, how do we make our lives meaningful? How do we ensure that our lives are meaningful? And this text was a text which was taught to me by my Rosh Yeshiva of Aaron Lichtenstein, who really did have an aim. And he used to say that when we go out for cultural activities, we should think about how that cultural activity will in some way ennoble us. Now, I have to say that there was an earlier time in my life where I spent time in yeshiva where I think this did make me a little over-obsessive. To think about every movie I go see, and to think about every book that I read, that it should be somehow contribute to my ennoblement, that's a very hard thing to say. I have to say that the Rambam himself says that if a person needs to relax, go for a walk, go to a museum, a person should do that too. That's also part of health. So the Rambam felt that we should be able to do this in a healthy manner. But I guess what this text has given to me is a widening of the definition of a mitzvah. You know, there's a Breslov song which says, mitzvah gedola liot b'simcha tamid. A person should always be happy. It's a mitzvah to always be happy. And the Litvaks, the sort of strict yeshiva world, don't like this at all. They say, what do you mean you have to be happy all the time? First of all, who said there's a mitzvah to be happy? Second of all, there are days when you're not allowed to be happy, like Tisha B'Av. And therefore, in certain yeshiva circles, they will say, simcha gedola liot b'mitzvah tamid. It is a great joy to always be in the status of a mitzvah. What do I mean by being always in a mitzvah? I think a person can live their life looking for mitzvah opportunities. I think if I am doing my shopping and I talk with respect and treat as a human being the person who is checking out the goods that I've just bought, don't just look at it as like, hurry up, but I actually think about that person as a person. That is an opportunity to be b'mitzvah tamid. That's an opportunity to have an awareness that here, my interaction with every human being I encounter can be an opportunity for a mitzvah. You know, it used to be the statement that that a person can look at their interaction with their kids, with their spouse, in their workplace, as really engaging in a mitzvah. I had a friend of mine who used to work in a finance company. And when I asked him, you know, does he find the rat race and the money too much? He says, well, actually, when I'm at work, I focus on making sure that all the people who I'm responsible for in my department have meaningful jobs and they don't feel they're just like sort of a rat in a cage going through meaningless activities, but their work is meaningful and they feel they have progress. In other words, at every moment in our lives, we have an opportunity, b'chol derachecha ta'ehu, to know God in everything we do. And I feel that this text is sort of a call to make the moments of our life meaningful and to do that with a sort of creative sense of trying to see if we can be b'mitzvah tamid. Not in an obsessive way, not in a harmful way. Sometimes it means sort of expanding what we call mitzvah.
You know, it seems to me, I think you sort of took the Rambam a step further. You know, when I read the Rambam, my impression is he's talking about seeing healthy physical activities as a way to prepare the mind for serious intellectual activity and this intellectual knowledge of God. And what I like what you've done with the Rambam is you've taken him a step further, that we can know God or encounter God not only through philosophical speculation or classical religious behaviors, but we can experience God when our best selves emerge morally, ethically, with kindness, with awareness, when we find the godliness in the person across from us or in the world that we're living in. And it seems to me that you put out a really serious challenge here, that the mindfulness that we have to bring is most difficult precisely when we're not engaged in religious activities. But the real mindfulness, the real demand is that, in a way, everything be seen as a religious activity, because all the time, my godliness and the godliness of the other is potentially present if I look for it when I'm shopping or when I'm cleaning my house or where I'm doing all those other things, doing the laundry, because in all those moments, I can think of it as taking care of someone, as giving of myself, as showing a concern for something other than my own personal needs.
I agree. And I actually think if you come back full circle to the beginning of the chapter, it's a whole different take on the world. One person can look at the world, as I said, oh gosh, this is a world of competition. This is a world of desire. This is a world of honor. This is all going to lead me astray. But look where we've come, because we've come to a situation at the end where we're actually looking at everything in the world as an opportunity. My home is an opportunity to create a hospitable environment, an environment where my children can grow healthily. My career is something which isn't only just about, you know, getting more and more money, although obviously we want to be comfortable and we want to feel secure, but there are so many other opportunities on the way.
And my other takeaway from you, which I think you kind of shared personally, is this was a struggle for you, that the desire to lead a spiritual life, it tempted you to turn your back perhaps on a lot of activities or engagement and the desire to sort of feel that holiness, and that the Rambam's message sort of pulled you back in and I think gave you a tougher path.
I don't want you to think that I didn't have temptations in the other way, in other words, the materialistic temptations are very alive and well in my life.
You're saying I was ascribing it to too holy of a personality.
Yeah, don't make me out with these ascetic tendencies.
All right, but I guess when you're thinking in terms of your spiritual life, though, it seems to me that this text sort of pulled you back in a way and gave you a certain amount of strength to find religious purposefulness, not only in classical religious behaviors, but in leading a healthy human life.
I think, really, in terms of my temperament, I'm a person who believes in balance. I also think that the Judaism I grew up with, whether it was the sort of Bnei Akiva environment in which I grew up in, whether it's my family tradition who came from, as I said, the Hirshian community with Torah im Derech Eretz, even the temperament of the British United Synodal community that I grew up in, really had an element of moderation in it and a sort of embracing of different things. Sometimes I feel in those environments, the Judaism, there may be the attention to halacha, the avodat Hashem, the sense of God service, wasn't pronounced enough. And indeed, the question is how to live that fullness of God service, right, with at the same time being worldly and being appreciative of the things around us. And I think this is a constant mission. One of the problems in life is that people who think they've found it, I've found the way, and therefore I can now relax. One of the things we have to, I think, realize as active and spiritually alive Jews is there's this constant calibration, this constant awareness. And I do appreciate that for some people, that's a heavy burden on their shoulders. And yet I actually do feel that burden or is actually that struggle is the real struggle of being a Jew, to take every moment that we have, b'chol derachecha da'ehu, to really take everything you do and to use it as a way of knowing God, of being godly, and that's our real challenge.
Beautiful. My other and last takeaway is that it also changes sort of maybe how we look at other Jews or other people. You know, we tend to sort of categorize people in terms of how spiritual, how religious they are based on how often they pray or how often they do classical religious activities or observances. And here we've opened up a whole new way of thinking about it. When we see that businessman who the whole time he or she is operating their business is thinking about how to take care of other people and make the experience positive for others, they're running a very religious business. And I think that also maybe challenges us to think a little bit differently about how we not only appreciate or understand our own religious lives, but also the religious lives and purposefulness of others in a broader way. Alex, thank you very much. I enjoy this a lot. I'm sure the people listening will enjoy a lot as well.
Thank you for this opportunity.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. ELMAD.pardes.org.